Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Extra Inch. My name is Windy, and I'm joined, as ever, by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And by our tactics guy, Nathan A. Clark. Hi, Nathan.
Hello, Windy.
We're going to call this Season 3, Episode 1, although it kind of feels like it's still a bonus, extra special thing. We're going to come back to a studio near you soon, but we are back on Skype again. And apologies if there's any kind of noises in the background. It's absolutely roasting hot today. I was going to record with my fan on, but Nathan said it sounded like a plane taking off. So instead, and my God, am I questioning my life now. I'm sat here in my underwear with my feet in a ceramic plant pot which has water in it. It's very surreal. And Nathan, you've had to keep your window open, so there might be some road noise, but it's just too hot to record otherwise. We're coming here off the back of Spurs winning 4-1 against Roma in the first major friendly game of pre-season. Pretty impressive performance, Nathan. What did you make of it?
Yeah, my life is a mess, so I was up till 5 a.m. watching it. so my memory's a bit foggy. I didn't observe it that particularly well. But I mean, it's a pre-season game. There's only so much you can read into it. Obviously, Lucas was very impressive. He looked like he was operating at a different tempo to everyone else on the pitch. I tweeted at the time that he looks like he's match fit already. I don't know if that's actually the case, or maybe it's just that his style, his natural advantages just make him stand out in a pre-season context.
Yeah, he's super athletic in the way he moves, and he kind of glided up the pitch on a number of different counterattacks in that game, and I was really impressed with Lucas. His use of the ball was good. Like you say, he looked really fit. But there were some other impressive performances as well. Llorente scored a couple and generally looked a lot better than he did at times last year. I thought Aurier had a good game at right back, and Luke Amos, who was making his first start for the first team, very impressive in a holding midfield role, which, you know, arguably isn't even the role he was playing for Stevenage on loan last year. So that was good. And we had a question from Joel Calixte, or I think that's right. He said, Amos was a complete revelation and Gazzaniga may actually be better than Vorm. What are the chances of game time in your opinion? And I think we have to say exactly what Nathan's just said, which is this is a pre-season friendly. It means very little, and Pochettino is always very quick to downplay any results or performances in pre-season. He sees it as simply a case of getting match fitness. But Amos seemed to sort of be quite excited about it. They did a post-match interview on the Spurs website, and his first words were, "You work hard for this kind of opportunity." So for young players, it is seen as a big step, even if it's pre-season, to get that first game. What did you make of Amos, Nathan?
Yeah, I was really impressed with him. I thought he handled a difficult-ish, given it's pre-season, but a difficult role that maybe isn't his primary role very well. Was pretty tidy, was very, very active, which is sort of what you can expect from a young player in pre-season, because they are trying to take the opportunity, whereas the more senior professionals are just sort of, you know, taking it as it is. Yeah, it's interesting that Skip came on and played as more of a central midfielder, and Amos stayed in defensive midfield. When I mean, obviously, I don't watch anywhere near as much youth football as you do, but I would normally have those players the other way around. What did you make of that aspect?
Yeah, that was interesting, and in a sense, I would say Skip and Amos are similar in that they are both primarily box to box players. I would argue, but Skip, as the younger, you know, 17, he's 3 or 4 years younger than Amos. I guess that was to give him that freedom and to not put too much responsibility on him in the holding role. And why move Amos at that point in the game where he's doing a good job? So it sort of made sense to me. Amos was very, very tidy. For those that don't know Amos, he's always been someone who's not been that well, I mean, not well known because he's not been hyped, but he's always had ability. His problem was his growth was... He's been small for pretty much his whole youth career. He hasn't built muscle quickly, and therefore it's been a struggle for him to play in central midfield in under 23 or under 21, as it was originally, matches until recently. So he ended up playing at left back a lot for the under 21s, which I thought was a misuse of his abilities and probably actually did him a disservice for about a year. But last year, like I said, he was on loan at Stevenage, did a really good job there. Their fans said he was one of their best loan players they've ever had, and they really warmed to him. So I'm kind of hoping that he goes on to either have a League One or a Championship loan this year. I mean, I've said this before, but I think most of our youth players are at a level now where they could step into the first team surrounded by other first team players and not look out of place. And that's not to say that they deserve first team starts or even squad places, but I think they can certainly hold their own. And I would say the same of Will Miller last pre-season and Anthony Georgiou. Neither of whom I see a Will Miller's now moved on, but Georgiou, I don't see a future at Spurs for him. But they're both more than adequate at just kind of coming in, and they can more than hold their own because they are at a level where their ability is good, and that goes for most Spurs youth players now. So no surprise to me to see Amos do well, but it was very pleasing still. What did you make of a diamond formation, Nathan?
Yeah, it's another thing where you don't want to read into it too much. It might just be that he felt that suited the particular personnel. When the lineups came up, I thought it'd be more of a 4-3-3, but you often see a lot of swapping between those two formations because essentially all you're moving around is the front three. I think that there will probably be quite a lot of formation experimentation going on this summer, because I think Pochettino doesn't know what his formation is going to be, because he doesn't know what his squad is going to be. I think that it's going to vary so much on what happens with Alderweireld and whether or not we get a potential replacement for him.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think you're quite right. I think he can't be set on a formation as yet, and he needs to have that flexibility. So Bardi, you haven't seen the game, but we played this diamond in midfield with Amos holding, Eriksen to his left and Sissoko to the right, both kind of given freedom to break forward, and then Lamela just behind Llorente and Lucas. I mean, Llorente was slightly higher up the field than Lucas, as you'd expect, but Lucas certainly had that freedom. And it seems to work quite well. So we'll go on to talk about transfers a little, although there's not a lot to talk about still. The window closes in 2 weeks, and yet we've made no signings yet. Russ Green 8 says, what are your tactical expectations from Poch this season, and how does that affect our priorities in the transfer market? 4-3-3 and 3-4-3 as the options make central midfield the priority, surely. Does Grealish have the required physicality to do what we need? So Grealish is the one transfer that does seem still likely to happen. That rumour hasn't gone away. Bardi, do you think he's got the physicality to do what Russ is saying, and that is to play in a 4-3-3, play central midfield in the 4-3-3 for us?
You came to me once again with a question that I can't answer. That's because I haven't seen enough of Grealish, so I'm not sure about it. I don't know. I've got a funny feeling Pochettino's tactics will depend on what happens in the next 2 weeks. I still think we're lacking a proper centre midfielder. I'm not sure if Wanyama has recovered. I don't have faith in Wanyama. I didn't see yesterday's game. And I think a lot of that will depend on him and whether or not we can find that central midfielder. Do I think that could be Grealish? I don't know. I'd be very concerned about putting so much faith in Grealish.
Wanyama wasn't actually involved yesterday. Do you know why that was, Nathan?
I think he was on the injury sheet.
Okay. This is my big concern, that We're relying a lot on Wanyama refinding the form that he did in our last season at White Hart Lane, because last season he was a shadow of his former self, and at times when he played he was a liability and he didn't suit our system. Dembele, as we saw in the World Cup against France, especially, even though Pogba does seem to have a kind of jinx over him, I just don't see him being our main guy anymore, and I'm really concerned about central midfield.
Are you worried generally about the lack of signings, Bardi? There's this kind of hysteria building in Spurs' social media world.
The hysteria, to be honest with you, I'm finding it quite funny. Clubs are always going to take the mick. Supporters of other fans are always going to take the mick when you're not signing. But if you look around at the signings being made by Arsenal, by Liverpool, they're signing players in key positions. Like, they need a goalkeeper, they need a midfielder, they need a forward. So they've made those signings. I still think the spine of our team is good enough. We are forward players, are in some of the best in the league. Our defence, if we keep Alderweireld, is great. And Hugo Lloris, despite the occasional ricket he makes and maybe not being the ultimate kind of sweeper keeper and distribution, he still remains a World Cup winner, still remains a great goalkeeper. So I don't think there's a huge panic there. As I said before, my panic is central midfield, but I have faith that we will address that. And I don't think we'll end up with another kind of Sissoko signing. I think we've grown beyond the panic buys now.
But do you not worry that even if we are not signing players on the last day, say, or in the last couple of days, do you not worry that we've still left it too late and that they can't be integrated into pre-season, into Poch's methods? The fitness levels have to be at a certain standard. They have to learn our pressing routines. Does that not concern you?
Yeah, that is a concern. I mean, I think this season we're going to have... Lucas is going to have a breakout season. I think in moments last year he looked great. And then the fact that he didn't go to the World Cup, he's had proper training and he looks sharp. I think Lucas is going to add something totally extra to our team. And yeah, I am concerned. When Pochettino signed his contract, he spoke about getting the business done and the players in early. So he's been let down there by the chairman for sure.
Nathan, what's your perception of why it's happened this way?
I'm kind of leaning towards the idea that there maybe isn't that much to do for Spurs. I wrote an article at the beginning of the summer, and I listed 7 items on a to-do list. But sort of the bottom half of those are really a much lower priority. One of them was either sign Lamela to a new contract or move him on, and we signed him to a new contract. So it feels like that was very much an active decision that was made. Whereas with Sonny's new contract, it was sort of obvious that we would want to keep him and it would just be an elongation. It feels like that was the Lamela situation was very much up in the air. And I think that him being signed sort of puts a bit of depth into the squad, even if it also maybe looked like it was already there.
I tend to agree, and I think when Bardi made a very good point just now that he expects Lucas to have a breakout season, I sort of feel the same for Lamela. I know he's been at the club for 5 years now, and we've said this before, but there's something about Lamela. He's a really sparky player. He's got a lot of attributes that we don't have in other players, i.e. the ability to spot a through ball, his tenacious pressing. Actually, the way he pops up in the box, certainly at the end of last season in that Leicester game, he looked really great at arriving in the box. I think there's a lot to be excited about with Lamela, and I was delighted that he signed a new contract, which will run until 2022, and it kind of upset the right people too, which was an added bonus. I've got this feeling that Spurs are waiting to shift bodies before they bring others in, and I think it's not just down to bringing in transfer fees. I think it's also partly due to the wage bill. We don't want to end up in a situation where we've got players on the books who we're paying big wages who we can't even fit into our Premier League or Champions League squads. And that's a problem we've caused for ourselves in many ways.
Yeah, I do agree with that. We have a problem where the dead wood in our team we can't shift because they are literally dead wood and they've been appalling. Janssen, in Kudu, these guys, they've shown nothing which would tempt a Premier League team to make a bid for it. I mean, they don't offer anything. So it's going to be really difficult, and foreign teams know that we want to move them on, and I think they'll probably end up going out on loan again. I don't see us making £10 million on Janssen or even 6 or 7 on Nkudu.
I do have this slight concern that we'll end up, like you say, stuck with some of the deadwood and then lose, say, Rose, Alderweireld, Dembele, who are players that are clearly first-team level players. That's not an ideal position to be in, and it then puts pressure on us to make late signings who may or may not be panic buys. That's my major concern with the remainder of the window. I guess the other thing that I'm disappointed in is I sort of had started to believe that we'd really restructured our scouting and our analytics in recruitment, and we were trying to find players that other clubs wouldn't find. This whole Paul Mitchell black box thing, I guess, prompted that. But then with Mitchell, we brought in this whole team to look at recruitment and to analyse matches, and we haven't really signed any under the radar players since that happened, and it's all a little disappointing. And maybe Grealish is one. There hasn't been a great deal of interest in him from other Premier League clubs, so perhaps he comes into that category. But, you know, unless there's some surprises, it doesn't really feel like it's panning out that way. We've also seen some youngsters leave and other youngsters be linked with moves away. So this week, Rio Griffiths has been linked with Lyon, and Marcus Edwards obviously hasn't travelled to the States. Instead, he's playing a youth tournament in France over the coming weekend. And Edwards seems set to leave. I mean, from everything I've heard, he and his people, his family and his agency are keen to get him away from Spurs at this point, and who can blame him in many ways. What do you make of that, Nathan? Are you concerned about our youth players leaving?
Well, I mean, especially those two, because those are two of the more exciting talents. I'm slightly worried about Pochettino's sort of authoritative stance on youth players and just complete lack of interest in handling the egos of young players. Maybe that's sort of a generational thing, I don't know, but it's a little worrying. It's more than a little worrying.
It is more than a little worrying. And we lost Keenan Bennett, who I would say was a 7 out of 10 talent. He could go either way in his career. He could become really good or he could do nothing. But at this point, he was a 7 out of 10 talent and would absolutely have been one to keep. Really promising player. And you, there are players that you'd let go before him, certainly. So he's gone. We got a couple of million or whatever for him. We've seen Noni Maduke has left as well, who was sort of 15, so a lot younger. We lost Nia Kirby to Crystal Palace the year before, who's a big, big talent. Now it looks like we're going to lose Griffiths and probably Edwards. It's a trend, and it stems from not just the lack of opportunities in the first team, but the lack of a clear route. So even if you're not getting first team opportunities, you want to be able to see that they will come in the future. And certainly for these young players, they're not seeing that. So I think something either has to change in terms of whether we give youth players a chance, or our mindset has to change and we just accept that our academy is there to essentially make money, and once every 5 years we'll bring a player through. I don't know.
I kind of agree with your last point there. If you look at like Man City's famed academy, they're making loads of money from now, bringing in youngsters, sending them on loan, training them up and then shipping them out. I mean, it's quite incredible. They're shifting youngsters from 10 million down to £5 million across Europe. And if we can shift a 7 out of 10 player who might make it, might not make it for £2 million, then as you said, that it's financing the academy. And if you get one Harry Kane out of every 5-6 years, then losing a 7 out of 10 player here and there is probably worth their while. It's, as you said, it's a business model and it's working.
I don't disagree with that. I just also think there's a missed opportunity there in terms of backfilling the squad with talent. Like I said, I feel like there's a lot of players that could just step in and hold their own, certainly to the level that Nkudu has, as an example. And for me, there's a missed opportunity there.
Well, Nkudu barely plays. He maybe got a few minutes here and there in the Champions League. And yeah, I see what you mean. There's an argument 2 and 4, but if you've rated, yeah, I know you really rate the height, the youngsters, and if you've only given him a 7 out of 10, then I kind of see why we got rid of him for £2 million. It's a lot of money.
Yeah, fair.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Okay, we'll move on to some questions. First one from Brian McPhee, who says, what odds do you give each of Llorente, Alderweireld and Rose of being in the 18 against Newcastle? Start with you, Nathan, and it's sort of, the rationale's different for each player there, but go through them. So Llorente, Alderweireld and Rose, what do you think their chances are of being in our first squad of the season?
Llorente's a bit of an interesting one with his pre-season, but you don't want to read too much into that. I mean, it's just one game. I'm going to talk more generally, if you don't mind. I mean, we've got a couple of other questions about the same game as well. I think normally the first couple of games of the season, you get quite weird squads and you get quite weird 11s because you haven't finished your transfer business. Obviously, this season, it's all going to be wrapped up before that. But I still think it's going to be a bit weird because I can't imagine us having integrated players enough to be starting games to be starting against Newcastle, so yeah, it might be a bit all over the place. I'm getting a little bit more optimistic with Alderweireld just simply because he hasn't gone yet. I guess there's whisperings that the contract is still on the table, and I mean it would be so huge to keep him. It would be, you know, obviously the sort of like a new signing's a bit of an uncomfortable cliche, but he's such a good player and he's so valuable specifically to us and the way we play. You know, it's halfway to a good summer on its own if we keep him. And it's not a totally dissimilar situation with Rose in that, okay, maybe some of the stuff he said recently about his mental health issues make it easier for us to forgive him simply because that's morally the right thing to do, and sort of closes a door on the past. I guess he's one where how he performs in pre-season matters. And obviously there's only 2 weeks to sort of demonstrate that he can still be the player he was going back to 2016.
Does that concern you that we're going to have so many players returning so late from the World Cup, particularly the English lads, so, you know, Kane, Rose, Trippier, Dyer? Does that, are you worried about the Newcastle lineup on that basis?
Yes, there's a tweet I shared a couple of days ago, I can't remember who it was by, but he made a graph out of the top six pre-season training days, and essentially ours is by far the most pessimistic looking, with all of our first 11 missing over half their pre-season. Obviously, we generally have slow starts to the seasons, and it looks like there's going to be a continuation with that. Yeah, it's a little worrying that we're going to have an especially slow start yet again, when at the end of every season we go, it was a really good season. If only we'd started stronger, we might have had something special.
I sort of feel like it might be the opposite. I feel like players will still be fairly sharp because they never lost their sharpness over the summer. But towards the end of the season, we'll have a massive flagging effect where they will just be burnt out. Come, say, March, April time, their legs will just go. And I'm hopeful that, you know, we've got young players like Dele, who's so fit and so youthful and energetic that he can probably cope with it. But the players who are slightly older, the Trippier, Rose, and then obviously if Dembele stays, he'd come into that category with Tongan and Alderweireld, that's going to have an effect. They haven't had any downtime. They haven't had that break and then slow build up again of pre-season training. And I feel like it will hit them later in the season. But the sharpness they might keep from the World Cup could actually mean that we can start fairly quickly. That's perhaps me being optimistic. We've obviously got the issue as well as has been well documented that they'll be coming in cold, in the sense of that they've had their England training, they've been focused on the way England play, they're coming back to Spurs and the way that Spurs play, and we have a very specific style with a specific type of press, and they might be a little rusty in terms of our tactics. Do you think that might be an issue, Vardy?
No, I don't think so. I kind of agree with Nathan's point that these guys haven't lost their fitness. They've had an intense World Cup. They've stayed match sharp for the majority of the summer, and now they've got a couple of weeks off resting. Most of them seem to be behaving themselves. Kane is smashing a golf ball around the place. So, these guys are athletes, and I'm not too concerned about their fitness, but I do kind of have a fear, like you said, about them fading towards the end of the summer. Llorente starting against Newcastle always worries me. Whenever Llorente starts a big game, I'm concerned. Alderweireld staying would be an amazing thing to happen this summer. And I think as we're getting later and later, it looks like this might happen. Manchester United is starting to get interested in Harry Maguire, so maybe they're calling their interest. And Danny Rose, for me, is a spectacular left-back and an even greater wing-back. And I think he's key. And if we can keep him fit, keep him focused and playing football, then you know, Alderweireld and Rose are two players that we expected to leave maybe 6 months ago. And keeping them is, you know, that new signing kind of thing.
Yeah, that's fair. We had a question from Lee H. Bennett, who says, how many players do you think we didn't sign because of a stadium naming rights not being sold? So there's been this announcement today about the branding of the new stadium, which is just simply called the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, which is just so off the shelf and generic, but fine. But some people have been saying that Levy's done what he does in the transfer window with the stadium naming rights, i.e. tried to play chicken essentially with whoever wants to buy the rights and be the last one to blink, and that might have then cost us signings. Do you buy that, Nathan?
Maybe. I think the idea is that stadium finance is meant to be separated from transfer financing, but it's still a little worrying. But there's no transfer window or naming rights, so we might change in sort of 3-4 weeks' time to be, you know, the Asda Arena.
Barley, do you have any thoughts on the stadium naming rights?
I mean, there's a lot of teams in Spain and Italy that don't have sponsors on their shirts, and a lot of the time it's down to the fact that they haven't received a sponsorship offer which meets their demands. So if Levy has had an offer and he doesn't accept it, then it's fair enough to keep the stadium without a name. Maybe there's been an offer from a brand which doesn't really fit with our club and our journey and all that kind of stuff of where we're going. So it's fair enough. I'm happier that we don't have a name there than we've ended up with, I don't know, like the Pizza Hut Arena or something. So calling it the calling it the Tottenham Stadium for me is not the worst thing in the world.
It's not, but that's surely just a holding. That's a template. That's,
for sure.
Your name here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's waiting either for the right brand or probably the right amount of money. And for us to go forward calling it the Tottenham Stadium is fine. I can understand why they didn't put White Hart Lane on it, because then you just tie everybody in. And if you call it White Hart Lane, to then come back and change it again, he's going to break the fans. So he's been quite clever. A Tottenham Stadium is a name that you can easily like paint over.
I was sort of wryly amused by the fact that they released this article about the branding. It was just called the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Like, really? Really, guys?
You're
going to release a press release about this?
Yeah, well, it's quite important. I do quite like a branding document. And I like reading how they're going to use it. So my OCD in me really liked it.
Okay, fine. we're gonna go mega deep for the last question, which is from Nelson Saha. He said, a tactical one here, first impressions of a new kit.
It's the worst kit in my lifetime of supporting Tottenham. It's terrible. It looks bad on the players. I mean, normally you get a kit like the Kappa kit or the Pony kit, and it looks terrible on normal human beings, but a footballer can pull it off. No one can pull this kit off. It's terrible. The fade makes it look like a toothbrush. It's not good. And I've seen it up close, and I don't like the collar. Don't like the fade. I don't like anything about it. I will not be buying that.
Nathan, are you more positive about the kit than Vardy?
Maybe slightly less negative. It definitely gives a sort of shorts up to the nipples look from a distance, which is horrendous. It might look better in sort of a more casual wear situation when you're a fan and you're wearing it with jeans or whatever. And it might look okay with white shorts, although people have been expressing their worry about that. I did a terrible Photoshop mock-up to see what that might look like. But I will never, ever buy a Tottenham kit that's got red on it.
Yeah, and I quite like the training gear is nice. Some of the other kind of leisure wear looks good. The away kit looks fine. I think, is there a green kit as well, or did I imagine that?
It's only rumoured, but I've seen it. So yeah, it's real green.
How did you see it?
I can't tell you.
Okay. But the green kit, what I've seen of it looks good. The away kit, everything else looks good. I just don't like the home kit.
Yeah, I'm in full agreement. I think that home kit is a mess. It looks like every player's got their shirt tucked in and it's not in a good way. And the neckline's horrific.
Yeah.
But there we go. It's only a kit. It's not the end of the world. It doesn't matter. The main problem is still the red logo, but that's not going to change anytime soon. Okay, gentlemen, thank you for this quick roundup. And we're going to call it the first episode of the season. But we, like I said, we are going to be back to properly preview the season in a studio. And yeah, it'll be a lot more fulsome than this quick podcast.
Personally, I think it should be pre-season 1, episode 1, because this is our first pre-season.
Ooh.
Yeah. Even though I'm against numbering episodes.
Let's debate this. Let's debate this offline. Let's take this offline and debate it.
Yes, boss.
Right, thank you guys very much. And let's go and cool down now. It's the fight in. Clock. It's the fight in.
Interesting, mate, yeah.